From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Megan Mack. Our connection this hour was made in this week's double issue of Time magazine, where the publication announced that climate activist Greta Thunberg is its 2019 Person of the Year. On the cover, Thunberg stands on a boulder near the Lisbon shore, waves crashing and water spraying around her. She's photographed looking into the distance, and under her name are the words, "The Power of Youth." Time says it chose Thunberg for its annual honor because while researchers and activists have struggled for decades to push world leaders to address climate change, this quote unquote, unlikely teenager got the world's attention. What started as a school strike grew into a global movement. In addition to Thunberg's efforts, 2019 saw the activism of millions of people around the globe through marches, individual action, and even policy and infrastructure change. But here's the question, was it enough? Earlier this month, representatives from more than 200 countries gathered in Madrid for the United Nations annual climate summit. Some delegates were reportedly unhappy with the results, saying urgent items on the agenda were deferred until next year's summit. According to CBS News, Helen Mountford, vice president for climate and economics at the World Resources Institute, said, quote, "The negotiations fell far short of what was expected, and the can-do spirit that birthed the Paris Agreement feels like a distant memory," end quote. So as 2019 draws to a close, we spend this hour reviewing the year in climate. What progress was made, and can it create meaningful long-term solutions? What were the biggest misses in 2019? And we'll ask our guests what urgent actions they think we need to see in 2020 in order to set the stage for a sustainable future. I'd like to welcome my guest for the hour. Abby McHugh-Griffa is the Executive Director of the Rochester People's Climate Coalition. Welcome back to the show.
I'm glad to be here.
Also joining us in studio, Kate Cressman Kehoe, volunteer with the Citizens Climate Lobby, a documentary filmmaker, and she focuses on outreach to the business community. Welcome, Kate.
Thanks for having me here.
Rudesh Singh is a senior at Brighton High School, co-founder of the Brighton High School Climate Club, member of the leadership team for the Rochester Youth Climate Leaders, and member of the New York Youth Climate Leaders, who has lots of free time on his hands. Welcome back, Rudesh.
Thanks for having me.
Also joining us in studio, Helen Frank, junior at Brighton High School and member of the Brighton High School Climate Club and the Rochester Youth Climate Leaders. Welcome to you.
Thank you.
So I'd like to start the hour just by talking with our guests about the state of climate right now. The scientific community providing some numbers that you may have heard in the one-minute, what we call, billboard that aired before this show. And some of those numbers, to repeat it if you missed it, are from Time magazine. They say without action, the world's temperature rise since the Industrial Revolution will hit the 1.5 degrees Celsius mark, an eventuality that scientists warn will expose some 350 million additional people to drought and push roughly 120 million people into extreme poverty by 2030. When we're looking at the numbers, Abby, are you surprised?
Yes, actually, every time I look at it, it kind of just blows me away how, you know, we're already at 1.1 degrees Celsius warmer and the target is 1.5, no more than 1.5. That frightens me, quite frankly.
Mm-hmm. Rudesh, are you surprised?
Yeah, definitely. The fact that, as Abby said, we just have like 0.4 degrees Celsius left in our budget in terms of reaching 1.5 degrees Celsius, it's quite frightening, frankly. But again, the fact that so in 2019 alone, so many youth have been motivated, not just youth, but people of all ages have been motivated to act on this issue, that really inspires me and brings me hope that we'll be able to actually achieve some of the other benchmarks set by IPCC.
When you think about all the activism this year and all the different movements, some of the policy changes, the reason I ask that question of are you surprised is I know that you're also dedicated to the work that you do and you believe in it so deeply. And, you know, we've seen news coverage about all these policy changes on different levels. I guess I'm glad to hear you say that you're surprised because you're not blinded by, I guess, platitudes or something like that. You know, this is real hard work and you're out there doing it. And although disappointing, you're still out there. Kate, how do you feel?
I actually don't look at the numbers anymore. I did a documentary about climate change. We started in 2007 and everything that our experts predicted is happening and much faster. So I've sort of reached a point where I just focus on moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Helen, how about you?
It's surprising in the sense that it's gone this far. We've known about this issue for 30 years. So to be at this point where we haven't acted in the ways that we needed to is disheartening and surprising.
I want to ask a question that may sound trite, but I think it's important because it will give our listeners a sense of how you see things on a very broad perspective. So I'd like each of you to grade the year in climate. How did we do A, B, C, D, F, you know, on every level? You don't have to break it down specifically, but overall, an overarching grade for climate action. Helen, we'll start with you.
Probably a B plus. We've seen a lot of involvement, and people are more aware of this issue and more willing to do the required action. So that is good. But then there's always more that we could do.
Mm-hmm. Kate?
I would give it a C because I think the calls for action are getting much more coherent and stronger and coming from more and more different kinds of voices, from youth to the military to Boston Consulting Group to large insurers. But meaningful action is still too slow.
Okay. Abby?
Yeah, similarly, I think for climate action and activists, I'd give us a C. You know, there are more people getting involved. There's a lot more open talk about the need to do something about climate. But we're still not nearly as coordinated as we need to be. There's still a lot of even just bickering among those who care about this issue and want to move forward about exactly what solution we need to pursue. So C for the activists. And I'd say in terms of actual implementation of solutions, I'd give us like a D minus. You know, global emissions are still going up. And that's really the fundamental, you know, metric we need to be looking at. Are emissions going up or going down? So long as they're still going up, we're basically failing.
I want to ask you about the bickering. What are some of the arguments that are happening within the activism circle?
So, you know, for example, conversations about carbon pricing. CCL, for example, Citizens Climate Lobby, strongly advocates for a price on carbon. I am also personally on board with that idea. I think, you know, we have this fundamental market failure that we need to address. And given our current political climate and economic system, I think carbon pricing makes a lot of sense. And, you know, 97% of economists also endorse that idea. But within the climate movement, broadly speaking, there is a fair amount of opposition to a price on carbon. You know, not that any of us think it's the only solution that we would need, but, you know, to my understanding, it would move us in the right direction. That's why, you know, for me, it's something we should be pursuing right away. But there are people within the climate movement who are quite actively fighting against that.
Is it the type of situation where it's unless we have the perfect policy, we shouldn't enact any policy at all?
That's pretty much where the debate is, you know, internally. And, you know, and I understand the concerns. And certainly historically, there have been many examples of things that we, you know, maybe thought were progress that in fact created all sorts of unintended consequences. So, you know, not ignoring how complicated this issue is. I think we need to get past that idea that we're going to identify one perfect solution that everyone's going to get behind. And we need to just, you know, be willing to compromise.
Before we ask Radesh for his grade, I just want to ask you one more question on this issue, because if we talk about the risk rewards of this debate, I mean, what are those for you? What is the risk of not having a policy at all, or having a policy that's not perfect and then having to start at the drawing board? Obviously, you have a perspective on it. I don't think have someone here who's arguing for no policy. But keeping that perspective in mind, I mean, what's the risk on both sides?
Time. I mean, for me, it all comes down to we don't have time to, you know, I hate to say debate the details, because obviously we want robust debate about what solutions make sense. But we just, you know, time is of the essence. We have to start reducing emissions now. And so the more time we spend in, again, trying to identify the perfect solution that's going to, you know, everyone will be on board, the further past, you know, the point of no return, we go.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Radesh, did you want to weigh in on that issue before you give your grade?
Yeah, and just we're in 2019. We're just weeks away from the new decade. And IPCC continues to tell us that we now only have 10 years to solve the climate crisis and prevent 1.5 degrees Celsius warming. So again, time is of the essence. And although there is a robust debate about climate pricing and market-based solutions rather than like other solutions such as Green New Deal, where you're pumping more money into the economy, I think those discussions are good and necessary. But I would agree we need to, in terms of carbon pricing itself, I think it's a good first step. And I don't think anyone's advocating that it's the only step. And personally, I'm in favor of some form of carbon pricing. But I think it's also necessary that we need to have like further steps beyond that in order to actually truly combat this crisis. And we need to come at it at many different angles in order to do so.
Mm-hmm. Kate, you wanted to weigh in too.
Yeah, I think of, so Citizens Climate Lobby, our central focus is legislation which exists in the House right now as H.R. 763, which is a bipartisan legislation on carbon pricing. And one way I explain it is it's like we are in a big hurricane and there's a hole in the roof and water's flooding in and it's wrecking all our stuff. And we say, hey, we have a tarp and some nails. And it's not going to solve the whole problem, but it at least get us started and get us a little time to figure out, okay, how are we going to replace the sofa and what are we going to do and do we have to move and everything else? Because it is a complex, multifaceted issue, and I think there is a danger of everyone saying, oh, we need to have it all perfect before we take action, and we don't have time.
So a B-plus from Helen, a C from Kate, a C for activists from Abby, and a D-minus for actual tangible change, Radesh.
I would say a B-minus. I guess coming from a youth perspective, I don't have as much years in terms of being in the climate activist movement, but just from the activism perspective of having millions of youth across the world paying attention to the issues, paying attention to what their politicians are doing, and actively moving forward climate solutions in order to combat this climate crisis, it's really inspiring. And although the response has not been as fast as I personally would like it, especially with COP25 and many delegates seeing that the solutions that were proposed there and the steps that taken were not fast enough, that is obviously quite disappointing. But overall, I would still say that this year has been better for the climate movement than years past.
So our students are much more optimistic than our other guests.
And I would give our students a much better grade than people my age.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that. Yep. Mm-hmm. We can give the youth activists an A+.
Absolutely.
And the rest of us, oui.
Well, we can talk all about strikes and marches and the value of those. I know, you know, we have some questions from a critic coming up later in the hour regarding demonstrations, but let's keep our focus broad for a moment. And I want to ask each of you, what is the single best thing regarding climate action that happened in 2019? If you had to choose one thing to celebrate this year, what would it be, Kate?
I think I would say that it is the formation of the Senate Climate Solutions Caucus, which is a very serious working group within the Senate. It was formed by Mike Brown of Indiana, who's a Republican, and Chris Coons, a Democrat. And it's very small, but they're bringing in people so that it's always fully bipartisan. And they're really serious about trying to find solutions. And the fact that they're having that discussion and that people are joining right now, there are eight people, I think is a huge, huge step forward.
That reminds me, Abby, maybe you can help me out. When we first had Bob Inglis on the show, it was several years ago, Republican leader who, you know, was speaking out against his party regarding their policy on climate change. I want to say it was 2015, maybe 2016. I can look it up in a moment. But at that point, he was an anomaly, really. Mm-hmm. He was one of the few. And now we're having bipartisan coalitions, which, Radesh, how do you see that progress moving quickly enough?
I would say that it's heartening to see that there's been more bipartisan support for climate solutions. And I would say like individuals under the age of about like 20, 25, regardless of their party affiliation or politics would agree that climate change is not only real, that it's not only induced by human activities, but it's one of the most pressing issues ever faced by humanity, and that they will vote for politicians based on their climate solutions and their stance on climate change. So I think for the younger generation, my generation, regardless of your political affiliation, climate change is a number one priority. It's just unfortunate and disheartening to see a lot of our politicians and elected leaders in office not feeling that same angst and that same worries that my generation feels about this issue.
It was 2016 that former Congressman Bob Inglis was on this program. Helen, when you think about the conversations you're having in Climate Club at Brighton High School, do politics ever come up? I know you're all on the same page regarding climate change, but do those types of discussions ever enter into your meetings?
I wouldn't say that politics divide us. We kind of join to approach the political side of this issue. For instance, we had a strike in front of Dr. Joe Carbone's office earlier this year, and we have participated in many strikes and helped organize a strike recently. So we all agree that this is our future and we need to do something to fix it, and we're approaching the political side of it, but it's not something that generally divides us.
What happened as a result of the strike? Did you receive any kind of feedback from Dr. Carbone's office?
Not really.
The look on Radesh's face, he's just...
Yeah, definitely. Unfortunately, the Republican leadership in our county has been very unresponsive to our proposal. For those of you who don't know, RYCL, or Rochester Youth Climate Leaders, has been advocating for the creation of a Climate Action Plan Advisory Board, which would consist of about 11 individuals from both the legislature and the community who would be discussing climate policies and climate solutions for county government to implement. And this advisory board would be tasked with creating a climate action plan within 6 months and submitting to the full legislature for approval. It's a great first step for our county to take and would cost the county nothing. Yet we continue to encounter a lot of conservative opposition to our proposal. We're very hopeful, though, in the upcoming year, in 2020, that with the changing administration, that our proposal will be up for a vote and be referred to committee and that it will be implemented. And we're also very excited that the solutions that this advisory board would come up with are not only comprehensive but aggressive enough in order to achieve carbon neutrality by 2050. So,
Abby, the biggest success in climate action in 2019?
It's hard for me to choose just one, of course. I mean, you know, I know we've been harping on this a little, but I'm going to repeat. The youth activism and the youth leadership is huge. You know, at the state level, the passage of the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act was definitely a positive thing. Not actually as robust as we would have liked to see it be. You know, and it's so interesting, you know, to put that in perspective, that this is the most ambitious piece of climate legislation in the country, yet it actually still falls short. And then, you know, of course, it remains to be seen how that will be implemented. So we'll certainly keep an eye on that in 2020. Another local thing, though, you know, in terms of progress that really is exciting is the communities that are moving forward with community choice aggregation. This is a big step for our region. So I would, you know, call that one out in particular.
Which communities are on the list right now?
Oh, gosh, I'm going to leave some of them off. You know, the city of Rochester has passed the enabling legislation. Brighton, Irondequoit, Penfield, Pittsburgh.
Penfield's working on it. But Pittsburgh did pass it.
You know, a number of them are there at different stages. Number have passed the enabling legislation. Some haven't selected their administrator. And I think just one is actually up and running, and that's in Geneva. Does that sound right to you guys? But I can't keep track, which is actually great, because that shows how quickly it's moving forward and changing.
Radesh.
Yeah, and just adding on to like the one thing that I've been really inspired by this year, again, as Abby said, the youth activism that my peers have been so energized and engaged by activists like Greta Thunberg being named Time Person of the Year. It's just really inspiring to see millions of youth across the world demonstrating against the political inaction on the climate crisis. And I was recently looking at the numbers on the global climate strikes on September 20th and 27th, there was an estimated 9.6 million people, not just youth, but 9.6 million people in over 150 nations that demonstrated and striked against political inaction on the climate crisis, which is, again, the largest mobilization of people for climate action in human history, which for me is so inspiring, and it really motivates me to continue my work in the local Rochester area to achieve carbon neutrality and combat the climate crisis. So.
Helen, the biggest success you think in 2019 when it comes to climate action?
I would have to agree with Radesh and Abby on this one, that the increased youth involvement and just involvement in general, we've seen many people, regardless of age, join us at our strikes, has been really inspiring and awesome to see.
So I want to go back to talking about demonstrations based on what you've all just said, because we had a listener write in with a question about the impact of that. And he was saying that it's, you know, we're seeing these massive strikes and these marches. And his question is, you know, I want to argue that demonstrations have not led to enough widespread policy change. There's little concrete progress. How can you justify continuing doing these types of actions when you're not seeing great results? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I guess I can speak to that. Actually, I would really strongly disagree with that notion. Just actually in our New York State, just actually this past December 20th, so this past Friday, the New York State Senate Bill S2385, which passed both the Assembly and the State Senate this past June, was submitted to the desk of the governor to sign, which would actually establish an environmental justice advisory group. And this group would be tasked to making sure that no group is disproportionately affected by climate change and the climate crisis. And this group would also be tasked with crafting environmental justice policy for state agencies, including the DEC, to implement. And it also creates an environmental justice interagency coordinating council, which would monitor these state agencies to make sure they abide by the policies submitted by this environmental justice working group. So, and I believe that this was a direct correlation with the amount of youth activism and activism in general in New York State. On September 20th, over 250,000 individuals of all ages striked as a part of the global climate strikes. And the groups that have been working to pass this legislation, including New York Renews, have quoted saying that the activism and the demonstrations that are occurring across the state have actually led to substantial change in terms of climate legislation, although we obviously want more and we hope to see more in the upcoming years.
Mm-hmm. Abby, do you have any thoughts or any message to share with that listener who is being critical of demonstrations and marches?
Yeah, you know, I think it's a good question. I think it's a valid question. Because although, you know, as Radesh points out, there has been progress, and I think that progress can be connected directly to the activism that we've seen, the progress remains much, much, much too slow. So clearly, you know, maybe we just need more people in the street, or maybe we need other tactics to supplement, you know, people out in the street. And that would be actually kind of where my thinking is with it, right? That we need people out in the street, we need the marches, we need the rallies, but that's not all we need. That's not even close to all we need. You know, so some of the work we're doing to address that, for example, we're participating in RG&E's rate case right now. And boy, has that been an illuminating process. You know, a whole big discussion could be had around that, so I won't go there. But, you know, just to really start to understand at a deeper level, where is the power held on this issue? And where, you know, kind of connecting the dots between... you know, well, in the example of the rate case in particular, you know, the government appoints the Public Service Commission. The Public Service Commission regulates the utility. The utility only has, you know, once every 3 years where they have some kind of open, transparent process where the public's even has the opportunity to engage. And at that point in time, literally hundreds of millions of dollars are kind of on the table in terms of energy investment and where that's going to go. So once every 3 years, the public has a chance to engage in that. And trust me, it's not easy. I mean, we're doing our best. But trying to play a meaningful role in that process, you know, up against their very well-paid full-time lawyers, that is sort of an uphill battle. So we need to recognize where those decisions are being made, when they're being made, who's making them, and where the money
is, you know, exchanging hands that kind of drives some of this decision making. So yes to people in the street, but also we need a lot more resources actually on our side to be able to effectively push back.
Mm-hmm. Kate, I saw you nodding.
Yes, absolutely to people in the street. I think it is a component, but it changes the discussion, which is critical. And you also see ripple effects where people talk, you know, across generations or to their neighbor or whatever about why I did this, why it was important to me. And as the discussion gets changed, you start to see things that also have big impact that are, I often post on Facebook with another in my series on important but boring, or boring but important. For instance, Moody's and Standard & Poor's are starting to look at changing their credit ratings for bonds based on how prepared, for instance, a community is for climate change. They're looking at stocks and the health of companies and what kind of climate change risk do they have or how dependent are they on fossil fuel production. So there are connections between demonstrations and other actions. But just demonstrations are not enough, but they do change the conversation, which is really important.
There was a Guardian piece, an article in the Guardian that was published this morning called or titled, "In 2019, the Public Woke Up to the Climate Crisis. When Will the Politicians?" It's a good read. I recommend it if you're interested in the subject. But the thing that I focused on and that I would like to talk to our guests about is that it pointed out that in 1988, Time magazine selected the endangered Earth as its person of the year. 1988, the endangered Earth. Now, you know, decades later, it's Greta Thunberg. So it's really the same issue that we're talking about, but we're approaching it in a different way. And the piece in The Guardian is arguing that with a personal focus, with a human who's out there sharing her fears, sharing her views on this, it's easier for many people to relate to that than the endangered Earth. Helen, how do you feel about that? Do you think that personal connection is important?
I would agree. And having Greta be the cover of the person of the year especially is inspiring to my generation because she is our age. She is a student from Sweden. It helps us feel that we are able to be involved and we are able to make a difference.
Do you think that the personal connection is more important or is more effective than arguing on a moral level or an economic level? We've had many conversations on this program on how to talk to climate skeptics. What, in your view, Kate, is the most effective way to talk to someone about climate change?
I would say the most effective way to talk to someone about climate change is to listen and ask open-ended questions and actually listen to what they're saying. I think economic arguments are really, really important. I think there's a huge emotional component, and we need to be somewhat gentle with ourselves and also understand the urgency in that we have a society that's built around fossil fuels, and it's been great and comfortable, and so to acknowledge that, A, we didn't know that was going to be a problem, and B, it's really, really hard to switch, and that we don't need to be pointing fingers and say you're a bad person is important. But I would say the number one thing is actually listening to people rather than coming in and just lecturing at them. Mm-hmm. Because I've certainly talked to people who have a more conservative perspective who even to be asked their opinion is threatening because they feel like they're going to be lectured at and judged.
Mm-hmm. Radesh, what's the most effective way to talk about climate change in your view?
I really like the emotional connection and like the personal connection that Greta Thunberg brings to the table. It's always really nice to put a face to an issue, to see the human connection to the climate crisis and how it's going to disproportionately affect my generation and the future generations to come. So whenever I talk to my peers about climate change and the solutions that are needed to combat this crisis, I always like to bring a personal connection and how it affects my life,
the lives of the people around me. And that really resonates with people because, I mean, at the end of the day, we just want what's best for ourselves, our family, our community, the people around us. So when you just talk at like just a human level, like obviously the economic argument is great, the moral argument is great, but it's just, for me, it really resonates when people talk about climate change and just humanity, and like we want to protect and preserve humanity for the future, and we want to make the world a better place. So that just really resonates with me.
Listeners, I'm seeing some of your feedback start to come in. If you're waiting on the phones, we'll get to you right after our only break of the hour. It's a very short break. We'll continue to talk about the progress or lack of progress made with climate action in 2019. My guests are Abby McHugh-Griffa, Executive Director of the Rochester People's Climate Coalition, Kate Cressman-Kehoe, a volunteer with the Citizens Climate Lobby and a documentary filmmaker. She focuses on outreach to the business community regarding climate action. Radesh Singh is a senior at Brighton High School, co-founder of the Brighton High School Climate Club, member of the leadership team for the Rochester Youth Climate Leaders, member of the New York Youth Climate Leaders as well. And Helen Frank is a junior at Brighton High School, member of the Brighton High School Climate Club and the Rochester Youth Climate Leaders. If you'd like to join the conversation, the number is 844-295-TALK. That's 844-295-8255. If you're in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. You can email the program at connections@wxxi.org. And you can find me on Twitter at mmacmedia. Short break, more connections next. Coming up in our second hour, it's an annual tradition from NPR, a show called Hanukkah Lights, celebrating the season. If you celebrate Hanukkah, a very happy Hanukkah to you, all of our friends out there. We'll listen to the stories that NPR has prepared for you this year. It'll be a fun, enlightening hour. That's coming up in our second hour today. You're listening to Connections. I'm Megan Mack, sitting in for Evan Dawson today. We're talking about the year in climate, progress, lack of progress, and much more. And listeners, I want to hear from you. Up first on the phone is Rochester City School Board member Willa Powell. Hello, Willa.
Oh, hi. Thank you for taking my call. I love hearing from the young people, and this upcoming generation is so good at influencing language. I've heard a couple of times from a couple of different members of your panel that using the descriptor conservative, but I don't see much that's actually conserving or conservative about the right wing, if you will. And I think they should be described as reactionary because they really, as one of your other guests said, they're reacting negatively to the facts on the ground. And, you know, as someone who is involved in conservation and conserving, I find it very difficult that they adopt for themselves the language of conservatives.
Okay. Thanks, Will. I'll turn it over to our youth activists. Helen, what do you think about the language component that Will is bringing up?
Language definitely plays a very influential role in this issue, and I see where she's coming from, and I think it is definitely something that we could consider changing the way we talk about that group of individuals.
How do you do that in a way that's not isolating them or creating a further dividing line, Radesh?
That's a really interesting question because unfortunately, a lot of the times, a lot of opposition that we do face is among conservative leading individuals in terms of passing climate legislation. Oil money and coal money has really funded a lot of conservative lawmakers. But again, in terms of conservative-minded youth, that notion is not there. The vast majority of conservative youth believe that in the climate science and in that climate change is real and that we need to address this. So I think just opening those discussions up with conservative leading individuals and showing them the facts that, hey, 97% of climate scientists and climatologists agree that climate change is real and that we're directly causing it, and then proposing solutions that have bipartisan support, such as carbon pricing and more direct investments into climate solutions. So
Well, thanks, Willa. Thanks for that question. Up next on the phone is Jim in Rochester. Go ahead, Jim.
Hey, how are you guys doing? This is a great conversation.
Thanks.
Yeah, I'm calling in because I find myself in an interesting spot. I'm a Republican, but I've been on the side of supporting climate change science for over 35 years. I studied it, back in the 80s. And I've seen not a neutral stance from my side of the fence and the people I actually disagree with, which is, you know, an active denial of science and facts and an active campaign on that, to the point where it's hard for me to look at it as we have to have a gentle conversation. We have to bring people along. Maybe it's time for people like me to step back out of the fight and the next generation step in, because I've got 25 years of frustration with this topic now. And I've seen on the other side, not a sense of, I'm not sure. It's a sense of, I don't want to acknowledge the facts and I'm going to actively attack the facts. Mm-hmm. To the point where 2017, they actually, scrapped an environment, a climate change satellite out of the budget to, quote unquote, save budget money. It's just been an overt effort of misinformation. And sometimes I struggle with how somebody like me stays in this conversation, considering the fact I've almost become jaded towards the other side of the conversation.
Okay, thanks, Jim. I'll turn it over to our guests here. And Kate, you were looking to weigh in. Go ahead.
So, Jim, you absolutely need to stay in, because I think you have different credibility than somebody who comes from just a pure environmental activism perspective. I think that one thing that has changed, one thing that people have been struggling with, particularly in the sort of business conservative community, is that they are looking at shorter-term goals, and they see reacting to climate change as incredibly expensive and difficult and something that will, shutter their businesses and so forth. And I think as the technology for solutions has changed, that just isn't true. There was a study that was reported by the Boston Consulting Group that it would take basically sort of plus or minus 1% of global GDP to take effective action to reduce emissions. And I think there's also been a misunderstanding of just how much is at risk, because that same study said that if we don't take action, the negative effect on global GDP would be minus 30%. So I think it's really important to keep people in the discussion. And at different levels, I think there's a whole political dimension that is very polarized, but there's a whole sort of brass tacks, what is this going to cost us dimension, that as long as you're not letting people know, I think you're a horrible person, you can have a reasonable discussion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Jim, for that comment. Go ahead.
I appreciate it. I mean, I struggle. I've gone over to reading, Martin Luther King Jr.'s writings. How do you stay involved in a fight that's emotionally exhausting? And I honestly struggle with these days, so I appreciate the feedback.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Jim. I know Abby wanted to respond to that too.
Yeah, Jim, I'm going to ask you to please reach out to us, because we would love to work with you. There are wonderful people doing this work locally, and just being involved and, working together with others who are passionate about this issue and understand the seriousness and are interested in genuine collaboration, across the aisle, it helps relieve a lot of that anxiety and frustration that you are clearly experiencing. So please reach out to us.
Thanks, Jim.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
I want to turn to our students in the studio, too. The last time you were on the program, Radesh, we had a call from a listener who expressed some frustration from a boomer perspective. And I don't want to create the impression that because youth are gathering together and leading strikes and marches, it's just for them. And you made a point to say, we are welcoming everybody. And the most recent march, I think, which was in Brighton,
yep,
included people of many different ages. So I don't want people to think that your movement is for youth only. Did you want to weigh in on that, Helen and Radesh?
Sure. This is a movement that affects all of us, and we certainly need everybody involved. The youth are involved because it is our future. But we also need the guidance and wisdom from the older generation. So everybody needs to be involved, and we're thankful for everybody who is involved.
Where can people find you if they want to join the next march or the next discussion, maybe the next meeting, whether it's the Rochester People's Climate Coalition, Citizens Climate Lobby, the things that you're doing as a youth movement? Kate, I'll start with you. Where can people find Citizens Climate Lobby?
They can go to citizensclimatelobby.org, and you can look up the Rochester chapter. We also have a Facebook page, Instagram, Twitter, and we meet the first, the third Monday of the month at the Unitarian Church on Winton Road.
RPPC.
So you can find us on social media, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, as well as our website is rockpcc.org, so rocpcc.org.
And if you're not a student at Brighton High School, Radesh and Helen, where can they find you?
So if you're interested in joining the Rochester Youth Climate Leaders, we're happy to say that we now have about a dozen schools represented in our coalition. 2 years ago, we started out with just two schools, so it's been exponential growth. So you can find us at rycl.org, or you could follow us on Instagram at Rock Youth Climate Leaders.
Thanks. Well, listeners, we are flooded with feedback. The phone lines are nearly full, and I'm getting so many emails, so we're going to dedicate the rest of the hour to your thoughts, your comments, your questions. Up next on the phone is, there's so many, I can't find it. Fred in Rochester. Go ahead, Fred.
Hi. First of all, WXXI and the city newspaper have done tremendous work on one of the most important things to do, and that is informing people about the issue. All of the groups that you have had on, Mothers Out Front, the Rochester People's Climate Coalition, the Sierra Club, Citizens Climate Lobby, are all in this big thing about informing people, which is so, so critical. I was among the first 250 people that Al Gore trained to give his then Inconvenient Truth slide presentation. I have subsequently mentored for a number of his international training workshops where we emphasize now the art of storytelling and giving our own personal narratives to introduce our own climate presentation. Most recently, my daughter and I did one for the Earth Sciences Department out at SUNY Brockport. And it is so critical for us to link together the very disparate interest groups that are out there. I, as a fisherman and as a hunter, can work with the conservation side of the equation and saying, look, we all share some common goals and some common desires here about protecting the environment for whatever our personal reasons are, and why can't we start those dialogues on common ground, and which is a very, very important way, and it's also a very effective way of bringing people to your idea by saying, hey, you know, I share some of the same values that you do in terms of why I want to protect the environment from global change. And when we begin those dialogues by respecting the other side of the equation, it is such a meaningful gesture that you give, because it should eliminate the controversial attitudes that we get by saying, look, we're all in this big, big boat together. From an economic standpoint, yeah, it might cost $4 to $6 trillion just to jumpstart this. We've already squandered that amount of money in a war that we didn't need to fight. We've been told it was based on false information. There was a recent report that says by 2040, that number jumps to $54 trillion to fix a problem, and there's not that much capital in the world to do that.
Okay, so Rob, or Fred, I gotta cut you off so our guests can weigh in on your comments, just so we have a chance to address some of them. Go ahead, Kate.
I just want to make a quick comment that there is a sense that addressing this has to be expensive, and it doesn't. Penn State has cut emissions 50% since 2004, and they've actually saved money doing it by energy efficiency.
Fred, thanks so much for all those comments. I'm going to keep you on just to listen to the rest of the conversation, because I think some of the things that we're about to discuss will resonate with you. Did you want to weigh in, Radesh?
Yeah, and just another notion of how much it's going to cost. It's the question is not how much it's going to cost. It's how much it's costing us right now. And the fact of the matter is, if we don't adequately address this climate crisis, the economic costs are just going to be not only economic costs, but the human costs in terms of human lives and quality of life is going to be disproportionately worse than just the upfront cost if we truly combat this crisis right now.
Mm-hmm. And I'll take that one step further just to say that let's not even just focus on the cost and the expense, but what are the benefits that we can reap? And I think those are many. You know, thinking about health and how can we improve public health? How can we address poverty in our region? There's, you know, the opportunity for job creation through implementing climate solutions is huge. So, you know, going into 2020, as we move, you know, out of 2019 and think about what's coming, what excites me is thinking about as a region, how can our region thrive going into the future because of our action on climate?
Thank you. Thank you again, Fred, for that question. Here's a question from a listener named Melissa emailing the program. She says, National Geographic last month showed that there are already areas in the U.S. that have gone beyond 2.2 degrees above average change. How do we say that we have half a degree left?
I wonder if they're thinking Celsius or Fahrenheit would be my first question. Or is this an urban center where there's I'm curious about the details from Melissa.
Unfortunately, that's all I have in the email. But Melissa, if you're if you're listening and want to follow up, I'm watching the email. So feel free to follow up. But Kate, you want to?
I would say that the target numbers are based on global averages, and there are absolutely going to be local variances to that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes. Okay. Melissa, we'll keep the eye on the email if you want to follow up with an additional question. Our next guest on the phone has stolen my transition. He has some thoughts on his biggest disappointment when it comes to climate action in 2019, which is a question that, unfortunately, we'll probably end up closing the hour. I don't want to close on a down note, but it is an important question. So up next on the phone is Rob in Pittsburgh. Go ahead, Rob.
Oh, geez, you're giving me that much pressure. great show, Abby, Kate, Vanessa, Helen, great job explaining things. My disappointment for 2019 is the fact that despite all the incredible action by the youth, from Greta on down to Radesh and Helen, hasn't been picked up by any political leader of any great value. And that's my hope for 2020, is that we can start riding this crest of a movement through political action, because, you know, we were given 12 years last year from the IPCC report to really implement solutions. We're now 1 year behind already, and we're not even at the point of discussing solutions. So we're in a race against time, and we need to provoke positive panic, I think is Abby's framework for all of this, and we need to get more leadership. Congressman Morelli is doing a great job, but he's just one person. And so if I could do anything, I'd ask every listener that's on today's show to call your member of Congress and tell them that climate change is by far the most important issue, and for them to take the lead on climate and help us create a better world. I'll leave it at that and say again, thank you, Megan, and everybody for another great hour of Climate Talk. Take care and happy holidays, everyone. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Rob. Thanks. I'm glad he said positive panic, because that allows me to end the hour in a more positive way, because everyone's doing great work, both here in the studio and then out in the communities globally. So instead of asking you what your biggest disappointment was in 2019, I want to say, what is the one issue that you hope to tackle in 2020 that you think will create positive, sustainable change that we didn't get to in 2019? Radesh.
I would say just the momentum, again, just continuing the momentum, not only in youth, but activists across the world and of all ages, continuing that momentum for climate solutions, whether that be carbon pricing or a Green New Deal, just continuing that momentum and encouraging our politicians to adopt sustainable climate solutions. That's my hope, and I'm hoping that at least in the United States state level wide, but we can get comprehensive climate solutions passed in state legislatures across this nation.
Helen, same question.
So from this movement, we've seen a lot of pressure building. So to keep this pressure on, especially on a local level, Rochester Youth Climate Leaders has been working with the Monroe County Legislature to adopt a climate action plan and establish a climate action plan advisory board. So as Radesh mentioned, we would like to see that happen this coming January.
Perfect. Kate.
2 weeks ago, I went to an event at U of R that was sponsored by the College Democrats and the College Republicans, which is one of the first bipartisan events I had been to. My goal is to expand those discussions more and to bring in more people like Jim who are feeling isolated and have a lot to add, and really broaden the discussion.
Mm-hmm. Abby?
I think 2020 is going to be an exciting year for our climate. You know, I'd be remiss not to mention the presidential election that's coming up and the opportunity that that presents for a lot of conversation and engagement around this issue. And then locally, we're going to be really focused on developing a collective impact initiative for our region because we need really robust cross-sector collaboration on this issue to move things forward. And really, as Rob said, you know, get solutions implemented. Just talking about it is not enough. We need to implement solutions and move the needle on actual greenhouse gas emissions.
Thank you. Thank you all so much for being here. Thank you to all of our listeners who weighed in. And there are so many emails, Helen and Radesh, congratulating you on your efforts and just positive feedback from the community about the work of the youth in this community. So I can forward you all those emails. It'll take days, but thank you for your work. And thank you, listeners. Again, we are moving into some special NPR holiday coverage for the rest of the week. So it was nice to be able to talk about the year in climate with Abby McHugh Griffa, Kate Cressman Kehoe, Radesh Singh, and Helen Frank this hour. Thank you all again.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you.
Our thanks to our engineer, Rob Braden. Great work all year long. Our intern, Emma Ray Stein. Thanks for your help on phones today. Our volunteer today is Tim Shea. Good old Tim Shea here helping us out. And everyone here at WXXI behind the scenes. So specials, holiday specials, beginning next hour through Thursday. We'll be back live on Monday. Happy holidays, everybody. We'll talk to you Friday.